Shlomo HaMelech says in Pasuk Yud Dalet, again, Yadati, we're up to what's called the third chapter of Pasuk Yud Dalet. Yadati ki kol asher yaseh ha'elohim hu yiyeh le'olam. I realized that what God made in this world, good, bad, that's eternal. And that's going to be forever. Alav ein lehosif, umimenu ein ligroa. You can't add, nor can one detract. Ve'ha'elohim asa. And when terrible things happen in the world, that's attributed to God. Sheyiru milefanav. So that people will have fear before him. And so this verse is what's quoted when there's a tsunami, when there's an earthquake. Veha Elokim Asa, the term Elokim is exacting justice. Hashem does forceful things. The term Elokim stems from the word El, force. Hashem does forceful things. Sheyir'u milefanav, so that people be God-fearing people. And therefore, Shlomo HaMelech says, a person should be God-fearing and be focused on being a kind, good person. Now, I just for the sake of intellectual honesty, I want to mention that in the interpretation of this verse, I shifted to the interpretation of the Targum and Rashi, whereas I was primarily working with the interpretation of the Metzudah. The Metzudah over here has an interpretation that I am uncertain how to translate. I'm not sure he could mean one of two things, so for fear of misinterpreting what he means to say in this verse, I've gone over to the Targum and Rashi. I think it's a very pivotal verse, and those of you who want to take the time would do good to look at the Metzudah and analyze it and learn it, because according to the Metzudah, there's a lot, maybe a whole philosophy in this Pasuk. The interpretation we just gave is the one that seems to be more accepted throughout the Midrashim and throughout Chazal. Chazal quote this, Ve'elokim asa sheyiru milefanav. They quoted about lightning, they quoted about thunder, they quoted about earthquakes. Chazal quoted about tremendous action in nature. So this verse, this interpretation is going to do you well in your learning of Chazal. But it does not go in line with the interpretations we've been setting until now. So I just want to mention that for the sake of intellectual honesty. Ma shehaya kvar hu, v'asher liot kvar haya. What's been is what's gonna be. Ma shehaya, what's been in the past. Kvar hu. So that's already been accomplished. You're not gonna be able to undo something that happened in the past. So that understanding in this verse precludes a time machine. If you'd be able to go back in time, so Shlomo HaMelech seems to say, you're not going to be able to undo what was done. Ma she'haya kvar hu. Whatever was, well, that's done. V'asher liyot kvar haya. And whatever is yet to come at the end, so there's already been a decree up above whether he's going to succeed or not. So that's a very interesting concept. If we're going to go with the interpretation of the Pasuk, so then the Pasuk is really addressing a major philosophical question. How can one person harm another person? Meaning if we each have Bchira Chofshit, if I have Bchira Chofshit and you have Bchira Chofshit, well, can my Bchira Chofshit hurt your Bchira Chofshit? What happens if I decide to tie you up? Did God decide to tie you up? So what do you want from me? If God hadn't decided it, how did I get away with doing it, right? So, it's God who did it, not me. So I pulled the trigger. Okay, so what? If God hadn't willed it, it wouldn't have happened, right? Oh, you don't believe in God? Can I overrule God? How come I can do it, right? So, Shlomo HaMelech says, Va'asher lihiyot, whatever is still going to happen, Mashehaya, going back to the beginning of the Pasuk, whatever happened is done. So your friend walked into the room and smacked you and walked out. It's done. Mashaya kvaru. Vashel liyot, you jump out of your seat and you run after him. What's yet to come? Kvaraya. That's already been decided. You're running now. Are you going to catch him or not? Well, it's already been declared in heaven whether you will or won't. That's how the Metzudah is learning here. So that means that it's true that one person who has Bechira Chofshit might be able to affect someone else, but even that, the Metzudah is learning, is decided up above. Ve'alohim yivakesh et nirdaf. But you have to realize that even though it might have been decreed in heaven whether you will succeed in taking vengeance, but Hashem ensures that vengeance is taken. Meaning, ha'elokim yivakesh et nirdaf. Whether you'll succeed in attaining that vengeance or not, that's heaven's decision. Whether vengeance will be taken or not, well, that's also heaven's decision. And heaven says yes. So this idea of ha'elokim yivakesh et nirdaf, again, is a major theme in Talmudic thought, in Midrashic thought. Ha'elokim yivakesh et nirdaf. God takes vengeance. God protects those that are being unfairly persecuted. And the difficulty is that you never know who's the nirdaf, right? I told you guys the story about the fight I walked into in the lunchroom. One day I walk into the lunchroom and two guys are fighting. And this guy's trying to bite that guy. And that guy's trying to hit this guy. And the two are fighting. So there's a knapsack in between and each one claims, "That's mine, you thief." I don't know either one of them, right? I'm walking into the lunchroom. What am I supposed to do? So what did I do? I just walked out, right? What am I going to do? I don't know who's in the right. Each one's saying the other guy's the thief. And each one's saying he started with me. These are mature adults. These are guys in their 20s or 30s. What am I supposed to do? Call the cops? I don't know. Okay, so everyone else pounced in. So that's another reason to run away. Everyone else pounced in and said, "Separate them." Great, you're going to separate them. But who's going to have the bag? Each one's claiming the other one stole the bag from him. So you can say, okay, let's open it up and start seeing whose name is written on the items inside. Okay, fine. So you could just call the police and say, "We're working out with the police. What do you want from me?" Ve'alokim yivakesh et nirdaf. But Hashem knows who was the one who was really being unfairly persecuted, and Hashem does seek out justice for them. So this is a theme that we always wait to see this theme, right? When's Hashem finally going to pay back? It's easier said than seen, right? It's easy to say it, but in life, you can have a lot of questions, right? Who says they'll suffer in public? Okay, so like Nachmanides says, if you want to make a promise, so then make it far away so no one can disprove you. Yeah.
Don't you find yourself in the Metzuda? He's saying that you have Bechira
to chase, but your Bechira does not ensure you will succeed in attaining. In heaven, it's been decided whether if you've chosen to implement your Bechira to chase, whether you'll succeed in catching it.
You have Bechira to pull the trigger, but it's decided if you'll hit the target?
Correct.
So that's the case with any murderer?
Why does that bother you?
Huh?
Why does that bother you? That's usually the answer that's given. You have a choice, and in heaven they decide. Meaning, let's say Al Capone has the capacity to decide he's going to be a murderer. But who he's going to succeed in murdering, that's not necessarily in his realm. He's going to want to, and in heaven they're going to decide who it's going to be. He's going to be persecuted for being a murderer. But at the end of the day, whoever died, that was decided up above. That's the balance. He has his responsibility to be right. And if he's wrong, so in heaven they'll ensure that he gets the people who had to go. But that's no excuse for him. What he's done is still wrong from his perspective.
Germans were the evil, but the fact that he didn't, the fact that this one got away, that's up, that's in heaven.
Right.
Anyway, it's in the end.
Even though on the Holocaust, there's more to be said because
the best example.
No, because there we have a different rule in Chazal. Our sages say that when there's a plague, when there's mass killing going on, so then the sages say you can't count on heaven to intercede. And there's a concept of kivan sheba andralamusia laolam. The second there's mass confusion, the second there's mass killing, so then ein mavchin ben tov lera. There's a terrible line Chazal tell us that no, when the machine gun fires, it doesn't matter how meritorious you are.
But that was my point. My point was that if there, was what you were saying before, if somebody decides to murder someone, yeah.
So I'm saying that's
that.
On an individual.
Who he murders is within his power too?
No, so I'm saying on an individual, what we've said is on an individual. When you speak about the Holocaust, you're speaking about the masses. And when it comes to the masses, so their Chazal in different areas give us different formulas. They don't say it's the same formula.
The perpetrators had a greater say in which particular person got it.
Ah, so that much
that,
I don't know.
That was
right, I don't know.
About. No,
Chazal just say that when there's the masses, so then even if a person wasn't necessarily deserving, that doesn't mean he's going to make it out alive.
Well, we always know. Even if some deserving people get it, even on an individual basis, innocent children, we don't know, I think.
Ah, so that's another discussion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait a second. So, if someone decides to become a murderer, if he can't find anyone who even wants to kill, so he can't be a murderer.
Right.
You phrase that heaven wants to kill in a nasty way. That heaven will agree for the sake of something we don't understand.
There was never anything that you had to be slaves with the Egyptians.
I don't want to give you a heart attack either. Right.
Okay.
Just that they wanted to enslave me. And we were there.
Well, okay.
No, they felt threatened because we were going to outpopulate them or something. And we were more, we were having six babies at a time.
Right, but Chazal say that was a product of a decree from above. The meaning, it played itself out, like we've been discussing in the Ramban and the Ran, that Hashem has the course of history play itself out through natural means. But we're given that perspective from the Torah, that the source of it was from above, be it the decree to Avram, be it like other commentaries say, because the verse points out that we were vayishritzu, we became like vermin, which was not only an indication of the numbers that we multiplied, but the level we were on. Vayishritzu, they became like vermin morally. That's what the commentaries say over there. But okay, at any rate, back to here. Yes. So if there's no one who's supposed to be killed, he won't succeed in killing. Correct. That's I think that's what the mitzvah is saying. Yes.
But in large quantities, it doesn't require the same.
Correct. In large quantities, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says it about the flood. The Gemara says it about the people killed in Egypt and the plague of the firstborn. The Gemara says it about many things. Yeah. We're saving it, Joe. Yeah.
That means you're supposed to do this.
Ah, okay.
But Rabbi, there were other examples where righteous people were killed. I mean, not everybody who was killed. I mean, they may have a wonderful mabah, but not every. The idea that I don't quite understand in mass murder situation, the law that somehow Hashem will intercede for the deserving or righteous somehow doesn't apply, and it does in other cases. I mean, look at the 10 martyrs we talk about, Yom Kippur, who was more deserving than them? I mean,
right?
I mean, I have no problem with saying I don't understand that, it's not an ATM machine where you put in mitzvahs and you get, good shittos and good life and money and long life. It doesn't work like that in one lifetime. I don't have a problem with it, but once you throw that out there, like there's some kind of, measure for measure in this world, in this time, that we can actually see it. It can lead to, thinking that, well, this person may not have been righteous enough, and that's why he wasn't saved. How do I know that?
Step by step. One second. Wait. You said a lot.
They didn't understand that somehow there was some sort of din that I don't understand in effect.
I said one thing and you took it a step further. So let me just...
Okay.
I said, based on the Metzuda, that if he catches up to him, that was decided above. You took it to the next step to say he deserved to be caught. I didn't say that.
I didn't say that either.
No, so I'm not saying, meaning, if whether the 10 martyrs deserved to be killed or didn't deserve to be killed is a separate question. Whether it was decreed from above they would be killed, that's yes.
But somehow before I gave that example, it seemed to say that in a mass, once these mass forces of hatred or whatever it is that are unleashed, somehow Hashem's protection of who, no matter how righteous, is not in effect in the same way.
Correct.
And that would lead one. I mean, let me just go to a very basic step. They are seemingly very righteous people who are killed.
Right. That's so that answers that, though.
So
then you don't have to start saying there are calculations, I don't know. You could also say that, no, there's one of the things Hashem created in the world is the capacity for there to be mass people killed, be it by an earthquake, be it by a Holocaust or a flood or a tsunami. Right. And there, the Talmud says, then there is not this distinction whether a person deserves it or not, but there is this concept where Hashem lets a catastrophe be unleashed without getting involved.
But you can't say the Holocaust was one big mass murder because it was done in little bits
and
bits.
Well, that's pretty bad.
And it was over a span of several years. It wasn't one long, just sudden like a plague. It was little bit here, and it started out very slowly.
So we're in the 10 plagues in Mitzrayim under the Musa. Could we consider that?
The first one of Egypt, yes. There was certainly a righteous among them. There had to be one Oscar Schindler of Jews or something. I don't know if he's the right guy, but you know what I'm saying? It couldn't be every single person was rotten. But yeah, that would make sense, your analogy of that one. But
I'm not following. You want to say that it's not in mass if it's done during the course of a few years.
No, because then you could also say that over centuries it's a lot of people too. And then you could, where are you going to draw the line and say that it's one long, big massacre? Because
so that's a question the Talmud asks in Tanis. You're right. The Talmud gives a number. The Talmud says how many people per city have to die for it to be called a plague. And I think that the Holocaust outdid the number the Mishnah gives over there, maybe 1,000 to 1 by day. So I think that the would constitute a plague, meaning the Mishnah over there says we have to define what's a plague, like you're saying, that in the course of time people die, and that's not a plague. How do you decide it's a plague? So the only problem is that we're using English terminology instead of Hebrew terminology, and therefore we've loosely translated many terms. I'm going with your term of a plague when really the term for plague, my answer to you is correct. But the Talmud doesn't use the word plague. The Talmud uses the word andralamusia or midat hadin. Andralamusia, I would call that mass confusion. Andralamusia is a form of something major like a tsunami, which then we would really have to define better whether your claim holds water. Meaning, just for the sake of intellectual honesty, meaning you use the term plague. The term plague is defined in the Mishnah and Tanis. The Talmud did not use the term plague. The Talmud, the Medrash uses the term andralamusia. The Talmud uses the term midat hadin, when there's exacting justice that's declared from above. And then
the justice if righteous die as well.
So,
this world is an all there.
What? Again? Again?
The Holocaust comes under the category of justice. I would say you could say that. I've heard a lot of different.
I agree. I'm losing something in the translation. Midat Adin, right? Midat Adin doesn't really mean justice. Midat Adin. I translated that because in most instances that's a good translation.
Severity?
No, midat hadin.
Not severity.
Okay, I have to think what's a better translation, but I'm not sure what.
Strict punishment.
Okay, I need to think of a better translation.
The room for just unknown. When Moshe asks and you can see my back, let me see how you.
This is something that most people say, but when there's someone trying to explain.
What Hashem is told, and things happen that are seemingly...
I mean, just to do the calculation.
Awful,
if 6 million say people died,
you don't understand.
And I would be happy saying that.
If there was over 10 years,
some people died.
About 2,000 people dying a day.
So we have to try
and reason some people choose not to be.
I'm going to paraphrase a bumper sticker that I think summarizes it very well. Stop it.
Thank you for paraphrasing.
I'm not a learner enough to know. There's stuff that is understandable that I don't understand, and then there's stuff that just plain isn't understandable. I think that's why it gets complicated, because maybe the stuff that I think isn't understandable, some of it may be.
It wouldn't ever fit.
I always find that a lot of these people, it's offensive when they try and give sometimes, but that they're, some of them are very high-level people, so they seem to know what they're talking about. We give credit in sinners or whatever. It doesn't come out right, but that's,
Yeah, especially with little kids.
It just doesn't, but I don't see things clearly either, I
think we diverged to a topic which he didn't really touch on. He wasn't discussing whether the person deserves it or not. He was discussing whether it's decreed or not. Why it's decreed is a different question. So I just mentioned from Yehuda's point that for the sake of accuracy, we do have to discern that when there's things happening in mass, so then the Talmud says that Hashem does not decree on the individuals. Maimonides comes along and says, it's not really Maimonides' invention. It's really a pasuk in last week's parsha that when a person is exceptionally pious, then God will sometimes exceptionally get involved on his behalf, even when something's happening in mass. Like Lot is saved, the whole city's overturned, everyone's getting killed, and we're told angels come to save Lot. Whatever that means, but however you're going to interpret that, and I say whatever that means because according to Maimonides, it would seem that that means Lot had a dream or something telling him to leave. And 10, which is the minimum amount to be called a mass, not an individual. Right? Back to Koheles. We've gone off on big tangents. Back to Koheles. And you see he didn't talk about one. And you see he didn't talk about Lot. I don't know if you were here for that Parsha class. We said that was one of the questions that Abraham had for a century. He was wondering, God, how could you destroy everyone with the flood? And it doesn't say that God answered him with the answer that the Talmud gives. Because the Talmud says, when there's destruction, God doesn't look at the individual. Again, whenever we say these things, it bothers me, because then there's another line in Talmud about how God waited for Metushelach. I'm saying, all these things have... branches which need to be discussed. They're generalizations, and each one deserves a class in its own right, and we're just touching on them vis-a-vis the Koheles. So if they interest you, why don't you come on a Thursday night and bring them up? We'll get to them. Well, this Thursday night you guys voted Koheles now. We've been doing questions for 3 hours. We were doing questions. there are another five topics we won't even get to tonight. But okay. Okay, so this idea of Veha Elokim Yevakeshet Nirdaf is a very important idea. On the one hand, we see in the Torah we have a mitzvah to avenge a relative who was murdered, right? There's a concept of Goel Hadam. There is a concept that we have a responsibility of taking vengeance. Isn't it a mitzvah?
I don't know.
Okay.
I thought it was a reshut. Didn't they say that it's a reshut?
Okay. I don't remember.
Well,
It's a Mishnah in Makos, but I don't remember.
You said 10 people is a mass, but that was talking about people who could be saved, not people who were guilty. So how could you say that that was qualifying as mass, a minimum number of people who could be killed? Who could die and constitute as a people that were
No,
happy.
That's not what I was saying. The exact opposite, like you said. They could constitute a mass. You said he was looking at the individual to save the masses. I would say to save the masses. Maybe you wanted to say to save those individuals. But I'm saying, whatever you say, you see he went down. What?
Completely different, though. The same rules wouldn't apply.
I'm not following.
Who would be saved and the people who would be killed. So Abraham was asking how many people would be righteous so that he would spare the people. So he says 10 is the minimum amount, so that would constitute as the number of people who would be qualified to save the whole group of people that they're living in. But for people who are going to die, we were talking about, you said different rules apply when it's a mass of people, and 10 people constitute a mass. So there would have had to been... So if you're comparing the same two, then for Sodom they have 10 people, and that would mean everyone would be saved. And there were many more, I'm sure you would say, religious Jews, than 10 in each group or something.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure, agreed.
It doesn't make sense. I don't understand why we were talking about 10 people in a group.
Basically, you need a mass to save a mass. That's probably...
No, I...
A mass to save a mass, so there were masses. They were religious, as a matter of fact, I think.
Oh, you mean
most of them.
He's saying, yeah.
No, I just don't think it's a fair idea to.
What?
It was a bad idea.
What? To try and explain it.
No, the show was just a bad idea.
Oh, well, I'm glad you think so.
There is an answer to your question. I fear that if I say it in 1 minute, it'll sound empty. Should I try?
Well,
sometimes I ask myself if it's worth it or not.
It seems like this is a very, just seems like a very interesting problem for people who want to talk about God specifically pay attention to you when he seemingly ignores some people. And little babies, and all of a sudden you're so awestruck that you think God's showing you specifically a little sign. And here he didn't care.
It's equally unfathomable. Doesn't matter if it's 20 million or one, if it's your kid and he's born, God forbid, you know, it's terrible, handicapped and dies quickly after. How could any human being who could say if someone like that would consider an evil if he didn't? Yes, Hashem, for reasons we don't understand, doesn't.
It's like the height.
You don't need 6 million.
The height of pride and selfishness to think that God would pay even a tiny amount of attention to this one.
I disagree. But that doesn't mean that I understand it, but I think that it's not to expect that Hashem hears one's prayers and might act on it. I don't think that's crazy.
Well, before you figure out why God is showing you signs, you should figure out why he didn't take care of all these little ones.
I haven't asked the question.
All the little babies.
It's my job to try and make a world where that stuff doesn't happen. It's best of needless suffering. But if something happens, to say that
we're not talking about reconstructing the world, we're talking about heavenly intervention.
All right. You got an expert. Above my pay grade.
No, but aren't you confusing two things?
I may be.
Heavenly intervention and, you know, fixing the world?
No, I think that I don't have the power to do heavenly intervention.
No,
I have the
don't.
Power to use the instructions that the Torah gives and some learning I have to try and as best I can, you know, make it an environment where that's not so as likely to happen as little as we can do.
I would try that too. I hope to be the person that tries.
Try.
But we were discussing the show, I remember.
I said I didn't have an answer that I told you before.
Let's start from a different angle, okay? If we begin with the Talmud saying that when there's andralamusia ba'al ha'olam, when there's people being killed in mass, so then shuv eino mavchin ben tov l'ra. So then there isn't this distinction between the good and the bad. That's the line in Talmud. So then we have to work our way backwards and ask, so why was Abraham coming and arguing? Why was Abraham saying, maybe there are 10? No? Doesn't that sum up our discussion? If we're saying, okay, why not?
You're not having, you're not on the same subject. You're talking about 10 righteous people in a group of unrighteous, in an unrighteous city. And it's that would, if anything, illustrate how many people would satisfy God by sparing one else. It wouldn't talk about how many bad people would qualify to wipe out a whole bunch of good people. It's the complete inverse.
No, I'm not following you. Let's start again. Okay. I thought I was following you till now. Now,
sure, you've got a mixture of many. They said that I can't remember. 6 million. I think they. When I went to Yad Vashem, they said it was like 2 million with children, a little over 2 million. And then you have so many of the religious people. I heard my great grandfather. he came out. He was talking Torah to them. I heard to this group in Romania, and they left. Next day they came back, they figured, they were a little bit stunned, this guy's running out, talking to Torah, we don't know what the hell he's talking about. I don't know why they left, but they left, they came back next day, decided that we should have taken him, yes. And so there's so many religious people who died, I don't see how you could explain that with any kind of argument about Sodom or 10 righteous people. That doesn't seem to make any sense at all to bring up.
Well, we had
no advance. Wait. So I'm saying you're giving an example, and I'm saying as a general rule, forget the example, as a general rule, when there's andralamusia, when there are people being killed in mass, and you want to call that the Holocaust andralamusia or not, that we said we have to leave that as a separate discussion, but assuming I'm going with the assumption that it is, so then the Talmud says the generalization is that there is no distinction between the good and the bad. So I'm saying in a general way, if that's the general running of the world, so then we have a specific question about Abraham. Why is he being told that for 10 the story would be different? Right? Is that a correct way of summarizing what we're discussing? If in general, I'm saying you're bringing out a specific example, I'm saying, okay, let's talk about all of history. Let's talk about the earthquake in Tzfat, where a tremendous number of innocent, righteous people in Shul were killed. I'm saying there are plenty of examples in world history. You could talk about the Crusades, you could talk about Chmiel Yunitsky, you could talk about the Tach V'Tat. There's no shortage of examples.
Yeah, but this one is the most predominant one.
Fine, I don't care. I'm just saying I want to understand. So we're talking about the same question. If this is the general rule, why was Abraham told, or do we understand by Abraham that he was told that if there are 10 righteous people, then the city would be spared, right? That's the question?
Well, yeah, because I thought you were using that as an approach to explaining why Shoah.
No.
To give us some kind of an explanation.
I'm not looking to give an explanation. I'm saying the general rule is...
People, the rules are a little bit different, and God just kind of goes a little bit berserk. He doesn't really... like when the machine gun firing, I'm trying to remember your exact words, there's no...
distinction between good and bad.
Yeah, it's just everybody. So there wasn't. It wasn't like that, where they just, like, everyone got mowed down at once, first of all, which I don't think it's very... sense. Say when the machine guns are firing, suddenly God loses all recognition of every one of his children. But, so I didn't understand what that meant either. But I thought you were trying to approach this with an explanation coming from Sodom and Gomorrah with 10 people. And somehow this constitutes a mass that could be, I don't know, maybe I was something.
So let me recap my understanding of the conversation, okay? What I was trying to say, what I was understanding. We said that when a person chases someone else, it was predetermined whether he would catch up to him or not. he has the choice to chase or not. But if he chases and catches up, that was predetermined. Aviel gave the example of the Holocaust. When he gave the example of the Holocaust, I went with it, and then I said, but for accuracy's sake, the Holocaust is not really a good example, because we're saying things are predetermined when it comes to the Holocaust. So then the Talmud tells us that when there's people being killed in mass, so then this does not seem to apply, this idea that it was predetermined who would and who wouldn't. And then off of that, I think you mentioned, what about Sodom and Amorah? And I said, well, Sodom and Amorah, so it wasn't the individual, it came down to the masses. I didn't say that whenever there's a masses, they get out. I said it did come down to a mass that was discussed. Meaning the individual was not given that right. So then you followed up and said, wait a second, there were masses in the Holocaust too. Now, I didn't say that whenever there's masses, they get out. But I'm willing to go the next step, and then we have to have a discussion of if we have this rule in Talmud that when there's people being killed in mass, so then you do not have that distinction between those that are good and bad. So then what was the whole discussion by Avram? I just pointed out when you brought up the discussion about Avram, I said, okay, but notice it did not come down to the individual. I didn't say anytime there's a mass, then the mass gets out, and we have to discuss what the difference is between the story of Avram and the Talmud or the Holocaust or any other example you want to give of Andrelamusia. What? Again, I'm scared if I'm going to say it in 1 minute and not in a class of 20 minutes to a half hour, we're not going to get there. It's a concept which really appears in Rashi in 2 weeks from now. It's another concept in the idea of harm that happens to a person. Okay, I don't want to touch on it without, it's not fair. I'm not going to get anywhere. I'd rather leave the question hanging and get back to and deal with it.
The next Thursday night learning, because it's not next week, it's the following week, just like you said, it's going to be in the parsha.
Okay, we'll have to see. I would like to do it this coming week. We'll see when we have time.
You would like to do Thursday night learning this coming week?
No. Okay, we have to think when we're going to have time to get back to this. We need to sit down and work through a few sources. Say that.